Good afternoon, and thank you all for standing by. For the duration of today's conference, all participants' lines are on a listen-only mode until the question and answer session. At that time, if you would like, press star one. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. It is my pleasure to introduce Secretary Merrill. Thank you, ma'am. You may begin.
Thank you very much, and thank you to all of you for tuning in once again. Here we all are, safe at home. And today, of course, we have a lot to talk about because we unveiled the Connecticut plan for elections just yesterday, and hopefully you all got it. I know we've been emailing a lot of information out from Ted. So Ted Bromley's on the line with me, as is Scott Bates. And I'm just going to briefly introduce the plan, and then I'm going to turn this over to Scott and Ted to talk to you about more of the details of it. But the bottom line is our plan is designed to cover as many contingencies as we can. You know, we all know what the situation is by now, and I know there's still lots of questions about the whole absentee ballot situation. Nothing in this plan has changed the law about absentee ballots. It is what it is. And I think, as I've said all along, I think we have to be prepared for anything. We all saw what happened in Milwaukee when they eliminated a lot of polling places, figuring that people were going to get absentee ballots. Instead, what happened was the absentee ballots, for various reasons, didn't arrive, so everyone showed up at the polls. So you just don't know what's going to happen in this situation. And fortunately for us, we did get a federal grant, which we will use liberally to help all of you try to carry out this very challenging situation. I think it'll be challenging no matter what we say or do, and all we can do is try to help people vote, because I have never seen so much mail from so many voters all across the board, Republicans, Democrats, old, young. They are very concerned about making sure they have a right to vote. Many of them want to vote absentee, and we need to give them some guidance at some point. So the plan today really is about securing the polling places. That is really our first priority. And I know, you know, we have as many problems doing that as we do managing absentee ballots, quite frankly. It is a very real problem that I know many of you are anticipating, that your traditional poll workers won't be available this year. And I will say right off the bat, this plan is for both the primary and the general. I know some people still think maybe we won't have a primary. I'm not one of them. I think we're having a primary because the candidates we have talked to over and over again and reached out over and over again still want to remain on the ballot. So we have to plan as if it's happening, because I think it is. And I think it is our job to make sure that these things happen in the smoothest way possible. We will try to help in any way we can, but the bottom line is it's up to you to have a good election. So the first thing we have in the plan is the Safe Polls Plan, and I'm going to let Ted and others talk more about the details of that. The second thing we have under making our polling places safe is our poll worker recruitment program to address the problem that I just talked about. We have numerous security protocols that have to go into place, some of which you have already experienced. You know, we now have to do dual authentication of our email and so forth. So I won't talk about that too much today, but there's a lot in the plan about the cybersecurity, which is still a big issue here. And we've sort of put it on the back burner since we've had all the problems with the COVID virus, but it's very, very real, and we do have to deal with that. And then finally, what we're going to do, which has gotten a lot of attention, which is the mailing of applications for absentee ballots. We are doing this to take the burden off the towns and the cost. So we have enough funding, we believe, to be able to mail an application to every eligible primary voter, along with a self-addressed stamped envelope to return. And there's a process we will put in place for you to be able to use a mail house to actually mail out the absentee ballots after people apply for them. So we're trying to do as much as we can with the federal funding we have, which must be used for this election cycle, much of it, the $5 million, to help the towns and you, our chief election officials out there, to be able to carry out this election in very, very difficult times. So I hope you are all safe and well, and we will do everything we can from our end to help out. We have had a lot of questions coming in. We've had some suggestions, some good ones coming in, about how you can help each other and how you have some ideas on how you're going to deal with this at the local level. So I'm going to turn this over now to Scott Bates. Scott, are you on the line?
I am. So thank you very much, Secretary Merrill, and I appreciate this opportunity to talk with Connecticut's election officials and talk a little bit about some of the particulars of the plan and why it was so important for our office to look at the elections comprehensively, to really make sure that we could take care of three important values here. One, make sure in-person voting is safe. Two, make sure our election systems are secure in an environment of cyber threat, and also make sure that election day is accessible for all qualified voters. And those seem like basic things, but I think all of you know, and I've talked with many of you, and in the first days of this crisis, and it may return in November with a vengeance as well, that the very foundation of carrying out elections was under question, because how are we going to have in-person voting that's safe? How are we going to handle the oncoming AB process that is going to be different than anything we've handled before? And ultimately, people's confidence in democracy rests on us doing our jobs well. That's you, that's me, that's the Secretary. We are absolutely all in this together. And so a lot of this is taken from your input, and so I'll just go through some of it pretty quickly so that we can get to your questions. But if you look at the section of your plan that is making sure in-person voting is safe, we have what we call the Safe Polls Plan and a grant program, and that is going to be working with you, each of you, meaning each of your towns, talking about your polling locations, how many staff you need, and what kind of products you might need to make sure that it's a safe location for voters in a social distancing environment. We have directions and guidance that we're going to share with you as well. So you'll be talking with us in the days ahead to make sure that gets done. When you come to your plan, then you can apply for essentially reimbursement for everything that you're going to need, and we'll make sure that you get what you need to make sure it's a safe polling location. Another is we'll be doing a public campaign to help people understand how to vote in person and safely. We'll have a poll worker recruitment program so that people, and I've had people call me up and say, how can I serve my country? A couple people called up and said, I feel like I want to do something, and how do I help keep the polls open? So there are people that want to help, and there are some that are not going to be able to serve or be afraid of doing that. And so, you know, we'll work to make sure that you have the people that you need as well. And ultimately, of course, you do the hires, but if we need more people, then we can help you take care of that as well. And we will help make sure that your polling locations are clean at the end of the day as they're turned back over to their normal use. So that's our plan for safe in-person voting. As far as a secure election system, and that's, again, making sure that people have confidence in their election system, we have agreed with the National Guard will be helping us do a cybersecurity assessment for every town in the state, and they'll be talking with you or your IT directors. This has to do with cybersecurity for election-related activities. So that's a great thing because they can take a look at it and say what you might or might not need in terms of plugging any cybersecurity gaps that might be there. We've been working with several of you towns, about 20, that have chronic issues with connections to our networks. Not going to name them, and when a reporter asked, we didn't say, because I don't think we We need to do that because of the security protocols, but we're going to continue working with you, and if you have ongoing issues, we can help upgrade your town network connections as well to make sure that the systems are reliable. We have a grant program that Ted will talk more about to help those of you that need to replace workstations that are outmoded. It's a 50-50 matching grant. We are also literally going to upgrade and replace the CVRS system. We can't do that in the middle of this election cycle. We've done a lot of upgrades. We have one or two more we may be able to do, but we are actually going to have, you know, a system-wide overhaul that is going to make it even better and more secure in the days ahead. So that'll be an opportunity for all of you to tell us how it can be improved in the days ahead. And I would say that the thing that is most interesting to me is that when I went around the state a while ago and talked with a lot of you in your offices, you were united, and I'm talking to you, registrars of voters, that it was a real pain to have to take the courses for certification. We're able to use some of the funds we got under the Help America Votes Act, and within weeks, we have an agreement with UConn. They're going to flip the switch, and we are going to be doing certification all online, so you do not have to go to those courses ever again. And there's going to be a course on cybersecurity included as well. And security awareness for all local election officials is going to be offered. That's town clerks, that's moderators, that's registrars. We're going to have some help out in the field to help us get all this stuff done. We have 5 election support officers, 1 for each congressional district, that will be access points for you to help work with our staff with your questions. We have Art House, who was the governor's cybersecurity advisor under Governor Malloy, and he worked for the President of the United States and the Director of National Intelligence. He is advising us on cybersecurity policy. And Peggy Reeves, who you may remember, who is our election director, is also back, and she's working on the issues regarding absentee balloting. So, and Shannon Berquist, who you may know as a trainer, is also helping with our election law questions. So we really have the people and the resources to up our game to a level that we've never been able to do before. And the secretary's referenced the ways we're going to try to make sure that the election is accessible to all. That's the expansion of access to the absentee ballot in terms of sending the application, having drop boxes that each town is going to have as well, and also doing a public information campaign, because we don't want you to have to field 1,000 phone calls about how do I fill this out and am I able to. So we actually have resources to make that happen as well. So thank you for your time. Thank you for your patience. This was our attempt to, after listening to you, to legislative leaders, the governor, and others, to make sure that we tried to address as many challenges as we could that we saw to this election with the resources that we have. And I hope that you view us as partners, because that's the way that we see it as well. We will all succeed together. So thank you, and over to Ted.
Good morning, or good afternoon. So to follow up on the deputy's conversation, so when the plan was issued, we sent out a few different documents to you guys, and I just wanted to go over some of the stuff that we had sent to you. So the first one was simply, I think it was entitled Certificate of Reimbursement, and that was exactly what the deputy was talking about in terms of the reimbursement. I know that many of you had commented that the first one that we had sent out indicated some type of $3,000 cap. That was an error on my part, and so I've corrected that and sent that back out. So basically what it requires for you to do is to substantiate much of your additional costs that you would have to absorb because of the COVID-19 virus. Much like when we offered reimbursement for the big blue cabinets, there'll need to be some type of substantiation as well as some agreement with your chief elected official in your town that, of course, the costs were associated with the COVID-19. And so the reimbursements really will be for things such as additional poll workers or additional absentee ballot counters and also additional supplies for the poll workers. I know that the one group that I have been working with, sort of the COVID group, where I'm trying to identify all sorts of ways in which we can get those supplies to the towns, including, you know, are there vendors out there that have prepackaged polling place safety supplies and those types of things. So that's the first thing that we sent out. So give that a read. If you have any questions about you know, what we had sent out, then certainly let us know. The second thing that we sent out was the grant program for the replacement of computer systems, or computers really, in your town. And I know that I've been speaking with a few registrars who had commented that some of the towns were giving their registrars some hard time about the fact that the computer was quote unquote good enough, or that you know, you really don't need a new computer to run the systems. And so what I would say to that is you need a computer that obviously is up to the standards of the safety and security of what is present day. You know, we are not only battling, as the secretary and the deputy had said, we're not only battling the COVID virus, but remember, when we first entered this election season, the biggest thing we were worried about is malicious actors hacking our election system. And so those people are still out there. So anyways, that grant program would allow the town to qualify for up to a 50% reimbursement for any computers that were purchased for use with our systems. So, you know, you can get quite a bit of computer equipment and quite a good computer for the reimbursements that we're offering. So that is another document that we sent to you. A couple of other documents that we had sent out. The first is sort of our opinion or our direction for supervised absentee balloting. That went out certainly with the governor locking down all of the convalescent homes and things of that nature. It's impossible right now to be able to administer the supervised balloting program that we would ordinarily do. I've been in touch with the governor to alert them to the fact that many of the things that we are sort of administering rely a lot on the governor's executive orders and executive power under emergency situations, so they are aware of that as well. And finally, I just wanted to update you on something else that is not directly related to the plan, but that will be out there, is that we have worked with the two political parties on a new manner in which to accomplish their certificates of endorsement. So this year we made, with the work of our executive staff, with Shannon and Gabe, they worked with the Center for Civic Design, I believe it's called, where they made a really simple form that has pretty much five boxes, and you got to fill out all five boxes in order to make that work. And also the fact that those can be submitted to us, because endorsements are happening in the next couple of days in many of your towns. Those can be submitted to us and to the town clerk electronically and or by the mail. So just be on the lookout for those certificates of endorsement. Most of the certificates of endorsement for this election come directly to our office. But just as town clerks out there, just be aware of this, that it's going on, and you can direct anybody that has questions to us. But obviously with new processes and new procedures, sometimes people run to the individual that they're familiar the most with, and that's the town clerk in most of these situations. So just know that they're out there. It's slightly a new form for the registrars who are being endorsed this year. That a form applies to you, and those are so just be on the lookout for that. Your town clerk is instructed as to your town chair is instructed as to exactly what the procedure is. They've gotten specific instructions from the state party, which we have worked in conjunction with to make sure that those instructions are clear. So hopefully that works out. So just be on the lookout for that, because we are, believe it or not, in endorsement season already. So with that, the other thing that I would say is that in the coming days and weeks, probably within the next 2 weeks or so, we'll be sending out more information for you in terms of things like the flow of a polling place and advice in terms of, you know, how to administer that. So as I work with the sort of the COVID response committee that we've put together with the registrars and town clerks, you'll certainly be receiving additional advice as we move through this. So anyways, with that, I think at this point we would be ready, unless the secretary or the deputy have something else to say, to take a few questions.
No, go right
Thank
ahead.
You.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please unmute your phone, press *1, and record your name clearly when prompted so I may introduce you. If you would like to withdraw your question, you can press *2. But again, to ask a question, press *1. It may take a few moments for questions to come in. Please stand by. And our first question is from George Cody. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm #1. Wow. Anyway, Ted, thank you for having the meeting, and Scott and Denise. Anyway, my question is specifically on the report that requires identifying or staffing of the polling places. Right now, there is no way we can supply a list of who the workers are going to be in August. Most of our workers are older. We have to have a whole new recruitment process. And the big problem is, are we going to require, as a part of a state primary, whether if there's a state primary at a district level, then we're going to have to run all three districts. If it's just the presidential in our district and in the Canaan, then we can merge two districts. And that's going to make a big difference. And I was wondering, how can we deal with that problem?
George, that is actually a fantastic question. Thank you for asking that. So a couple of things on that, because you just actually reminded me. So what we're really looking for in terms of the polling place or readiness report or whatever we're calling it, the safe polls plan report. What we're really looking for there is precisely that, George, is that, well, I don't expect you to know the exact names of the people that are working, but what we really want to know is, have you actually reached out to those individuals that are normally poll workers? And would those individuals, in the context of the COVID environment now, still be willing to work? And I know that a few of them may say, well, I don't know at this point. And that's fine. But what we're really looking for is to say, hey, listen, you know, a majority of my poll workers in my town are 60, 70 years old. And I know a few towns have actually sent me emails and said, hey, Ted, I heard you on the conference call. We reached out, and all but one of my poll workers are still willing to work, even though they're 60 years old. So that's kind of what we're looking for there, is to start to get the thinking and get a handle on, you know, how big our poll worker recruitment effort needs to be in terms of results. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I wanted to say is that I've gotten a lot of feedback from people via email that are talking about, well, Ted, we can't possibly run our presidential preference primary or even a local, state, or federal primary with just three poll workers. And what I wanted to say about that is that, and I know a few of you have emailed me about that, so the three poll workers are what the minimum staffing levels are for a presidential preference primary. And because the presidential preference primary is being held on the same day as a regular primary, the presidential preference primary polling numbers would prevail because of all kinds of statutory interpretation of specific statutes override general statutes and all kinds of other things. But that being said, if you need more than three individuals to work at a polling place, then you certainly can, and that's at least also why we need the report from you. You know, if you're going to have three people, but you're going to have somebody that sort of does crowd control outside and only lets a few people into the polling place, well, then, you know, we need to know that. So that's now you're up to four as opposed to three. If you don't think three are going to be enough because you want two official checkers in there or whatever it is, see, these are the things that we want you to start thinking about. You know, it's one way to loosen up the standards to allow you the flexibility, but then we also need you to consider that flexibility and give us the feedback as to what you think locally you're going to be able to either do or not do within those standards. So, George, I think I hopefully I answered that question.
Yes, you did. And then I had another simple question.
Okay.
Related to that, is there a deadline for the first selectman filing that report? I'm going to call, say, the first selectman filing it, since he has to approve it. Is there a deadline for the availability of that copayment or funding?
Great. That's another great question. So we would it would be great in terms of our planning if you could at least get the framework of your Safe Polls plan back to us within I think we said 14 days. That would be great. However, if you don't within that time frame and you actually need a bit more time to get your signature from your first selectman or to get with it, we won't ban funding because you haven't gotten it back. We intentionally left that sort of deadline a little open end because we understand that we are not working under a normal circumstance where you could just run down the hall and get the signature of your first selectman. So that's intentionally why we left that a little wide open. But in terms of planning both for yourself and for us, certainly you should start thinking about, you know, at least putting those details together within the next couple of weeks.
And lastly, this is more of a suggestion, it's not a question. Since the governor has announced the closing of schools throughout this calendar year, or the school year, I would suggest that everybody get in touch with the superintendent's office to make sure that they will have some availability in August for the polling places, or they will have staffing to assist in the school, opening the schools, et cetera, in August, rather than having them seal the buildings for 3 months.
Right, and that's a fantastic question. And one of the things that we are exploring, and notice I said exploring because I know that as soon as I say this, it's going to become one of those TED promise, but it's not a promise. It's we're exploring it right now. There are a few vendors in the state that actually we're working with to see if it would be fiscally we would be fiscally able and also in terms of a process be able to hire those people to go out to those polling places that you use, particularly in the schools, after they've been used to clean them on your behalf and on our behalf. So we are exploring that now, and so please, again, it's explore. We're exploring that now, but we do have a few vendors that are working on sort of their availability, their scheduling, and sort of a price in terms of the ability to do that. And one of the vendors even suggested that if you were able to, you know, package up the stuff that you needed to finalize the election, but leave like the tables and the chairs and the privacy booth there, they would clean those for you as well. So anyways, that is on the horizon as well. So as the deputy and the secretary have said, we are really trying to help out as much as we can with this type of environment. So thanks, George.
I thank you, and I will go back to my back seat.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Amy Winchell. Your line is open.
Hi. I just
Hello? I think we lost her.
Can you hear me now?
Can you guys? Yeah.
Can you hear me? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I have a question. I think it was Scott who mentioned something about the 20 towns that have connectivity issues. And I guess we're keeping those towns quiet. I'm not sure if I might be one of them. Is this referring to town clerks who don't have access to CVRS, or is it something else entirely?
It's something else entirely.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you know the name Tom Miano, then you're one of those towns.
Okay. So I would have heard from someone.
IT director. So
then I guess my question is, since I started in 2010, I have been trying as the town clerk to get access to CVRS in our town. Our registrars are in a separate building and the secured servers in that building, and I have never been able to get there. I'd very much like to. Is this problem going to be addressed at all before August?
Absolutely. That's one of the things that we have another person working on. Amy, what town are you? Are you Deep? Is it Deep?
Deep River.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
Okay, so I should be expecting to hear from someone someday.
I will have them reach out to you personally.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Steve Mason at first. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And our next question is from Barbara Thompson. Your line is open.
Hi, Ted. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
How is everybody? Hope everybody's doing well. I have actually a couple of questions, and they pertain more to town clerks. So my first question is, we have been getting a lot of phone calls from the public. They have seen Secretary Merrill all over the news, I think since like Friday or Saturday. So what should we be telling the public right now regarding absentee ballot applications? Can we basically say we're not going to send them out to them, the secretary is sending them out? What should our message be?
In terms of applications, is that what it was? I'm sorry.
Yeah, absentee ballot applications.
Okay. Right. So twofold on that. So the first is that, as the secretary and the deputy both said, that we're putting together a plan to assist the town clerks with what could be a heightened voting by absentee ballot. So certainly the mailhouse will be sending those applications out to individuals who would be eligible in the primary. However, I mean, if you get a phone call from somebody at this point, you can certainly send one out. You can also tell them that we plan on doing that in the near future. But if it's one of those people that are adamant that they want it from you, then there's no harm in sending the application out.
Okay. Do you have any idea when you guys will send it out for the primary?
Right. So we have to start working with the mailhouse in the middle of – so in the next, like, couple of weeks, we need to start working with the mailhouse in order to get this all together. So I would imagine that, as I think I said before, I think that we're going to send them out probably towards the end of May, the beginning of June, to give them a little extra time. Because what we also want to do is we also want to spread this out, particularly if we are anticipating a higher return of absentee ballots. We don't want them all to hit you on the same day or a couple of days, you know. So I would say that probably the end of May, early June is probably the time frame for that once we get hooked up with the mailhouse to be able to do that. But as I say, you know, you can either tell them and refer them to us that, you know, hey, this plan is in operation, or if they're giving you a hard time, you can get one. What I was going to say is you will know which absentee ballots we sent out and which ones you did, because they're going to look different and they're going to have certain additional things on the application to assist you in processing those on the system. So, you know, they'll have barcodes and other things on them when we produce them, because they'll pretty much be printed on demand by the printer. So it's going to look a little different. So you'll definitely know which ones are ours.
Okay. And then my second question is, so the processing of the application, from reading your plan, the secretary's plan, is basically the application sounds like it comes back to the town clerk, yet it sounds like the ballot goes out from the mail house. How exactly does that work when we traditionally give them the serial number?
Right. So that is one of the upgrades that the town clerks have brought forward to us that we're actually working on with our vendor as we speak in terms of the serial number. So it can go one of two ways. But the way that I think that we're trying to have it work is that once you enter that, you know, Ted Bromley wants an absentee ballot, it's going to randomly generate a serial number for me. And so once you enter that into centralized voter reg, that file is going to go to the mail house. The mail house is going to pick certain data points off of our file, including name, address, serial number, et cetera, that they're going to pre-print on the envelopes that you would normally see as you return. So when it gets returned to you, there's going to be some information in addition on the envelope that you can use. So that's sort of 30,000 feet how it's going to work.
So we're not going to be using our serial numbers that we have now just received a million of.
Yeah, you probably won't be using a bunch of those for August and November. I mean, you have to remember that we had to place those orders.
Right.
To get those dropped up when we moved, and COVID was not even part of our, you know, vision when we started moving our building and whatnot. So, I mean, you got to bear with us a little bit on that. It's just a constant
change. I'm just trying to think of the logistics of how, you know, of just how it works out. And then
right. And listen, we're going to need help with that. We understand, you know, I can't sit in Hartford and just, you know, dictate exactly how that's going to go without the input of the town clerks and the registrar. So we understand that.
Yeah. And then the drop boxes, are they locked?
Great question. Thank you. Somebody asked me to bring that up. So the drop box, each town is going to get at least one drop box. The top towns, because we ordered 200, so 169 minus 200 is, you know, whatever it is, 31 or something.
Yep.
31, I think. So the top populated 31 towns are going to get two.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we envision is that's going to come with all of the necessary equipment to be able to anchor it into the ground, whether you decide to anchor it in a sidewalk or whether you decide to anchor it outside your town hall in the ground or whatever it is, the parts come with it to be able to do that. The actual mailbox itself comes all together. If you envision like a FedEx or a UPS drop box,
okay,
where it's kind of the newfangled mailbox, that's what it's going to look like. It's going to have... You're going to be able to open it and drop the ballot in, but you're not going to be able to access the rest of it. And yes, it'll be locked and it'll have a lock. And I believe the capacity for the ones that we are getting is 4,500 ballot capacity. So it's not like you'll have to check on it every hour.
The key must come with a set of keys for the clerk to have, I would assume.
Correct.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. So we can put these things. Because, like, who knows if we're going to be locked down and we don't want anyone in our building. So we're going to be able to put these things outside.
Exactly. That's precisely what it is. And where you actually put it, we're not so concerned about. Obviously, we would love to have it in the proximity of the town clerk. But one of the towns said, well, in the same building, we have the town clerk's office, but we will also have the police department. So maybe we'll put it closer to the police department so they can keep an eye on it. Okay, great. Fine.
Right.
But, you know, it should be in the proximity of the town hall. And for those towns that get two for the larger cities, then, you know, that put one at the town hall, one at the library, you know, whatever works for you guys locally to be able to do that. But, yes, it's designed as an outdoor, water-resistant, weather-resistant, actual Dropbox mailbox. That's what it's designed for.
And then I guess the theory is you open it like maybe every day, you take them out, you scan them, and that's when you figure you're matching the person to the serial number and you're then doing what you normally would do with them?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay, I got
that's
it.
Correct.
Got it. And then I have one last question, and then I apologize for being like a hoarder here. So I see you have paperwork for the registrars to access the grant program, but you have verbiage about the clerks accessing a grant program for staffing, which I think will definitely going to need for November's election. How and when will we get stuff on that?
So it'll be virtually the identical paperwork. Very good point that I should have just added a line in there, but I will get that out to you as soon as possible. I'll even try to do it today. But yeah, it'll be virtually the same package, just designed for the town clerk specifically for that additional personnel.
Because don't you think, Ted? I mean, when November comes, if people had, I know Wallingford, we had like in the 2016 election, we had like an 83% turnout, and if say 60-70% of that is absentees, that's huge. We definitely need help with staffing. My opinion.
I completely understand and agree. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, and thank you.
If I could jump in on that too, I think we have a ready-made supply of potential helpers in registrars as well. So you've got people that understand the process, and so you may not have to look too far to find folks that might want to put in a few extra hours as well.
Thank you.
And our next question is from Glenda Grace. Your line is open.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, Ted. This is Linda Grace in Bridgeport. A couple of quick questions. We're referring to the plan for the cleaning and the vendors. From earlier, it sounds like you might have a list of preferred vendors. Would it be allowable to put in the costs incurred to have it done in-house? You know, through our own departments.
Yeah, I mean, I think we could think about it. I think we could consider it at least.
Okay, I didn't know if it was going to be mandatory, for an outside vendor or if our public works department under the direction of the health department or whatever.
We're going to look for whatever's most efficient. And by the way, I should just mention that all the funds that we expend are going to be audited by the federal government at some point, and that's a good thing for all of us, just like everything that we do locally. But yeah, I think that's something we can talk about in the days ahead as to what's going to be the most efficient way.
Right, because we have 20 locations. Some are private, so most of them are public. But okay, look forward to more information on that. The other, at one point, it sounded like you were going to supply us with the supplies, and now I'm getting that you're going to maybe we would buy them and get reimbursed. I'm not quite sure where we're at.
Sure, that's a great question. So again, just like the cleaning, we're looking for the most reasonable and efficient way to do that. So we are exploring all options with that. The committee that I have together, that's one of our tasks. As I say, we have identified some vendors that have prepackaged materials that are designed specifically for poll worker safety, and to the extent that it is more efficient and more cost effective for the state to do something like that. And then simply mail them to the towns. We are open to any and all solutions to that. So no, we are not going to leave you out there stranded by yourself, trying to buy a box of gloves at Stop and Shop or something. We
won't do that. Okay. And so my final question, I know it's not November yet, but has any thought been given to Election Day registration? Suspension of it, how would we ever think about in a city? I mean, in a small town, it could be a minor thing, but in Bridgeport, we can see upwards of a couple of thousand people coming in.
Right. I mean, that's a great question, and I'm not sure that we can really answer that yet. I think we first have to get through August. I think August will give us a lot of information and a lot of test scenarios about what we did right, what we did wrong, And then I think from there, it's just sort of monitoring the situation. You know, I know that a lot of people have predicted that we'll have a flare-up in the fall, you know, and, you know, knock on wood, you know, maybe we don't. So I think that we just have to sort of take it step by step. So our first task together as a unit is to get through August, learn from our successes, learn from our mistakes, and then carry those things on to November. And, you know, as I say, I mean, the secretary has been working nonstop with the governor, nonstop with the attorney general. So if something like that were to come up, that is an emergent situation for November and the situation deems itself, you know, I'm sure she would have that same relationship at that point. But I don't think we can rule anything like that in or out at this point. It's just too far away.
I just wanted to put it in for conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, thank you.
I think we'll need to work together to plan to how to carry out the law, and we have the resources to be able to do it. And so that's a great issue to bring up so that we can start working it through now.
Yes, okay. Thank you very much.
Our next question is from Andrew Stockton. Your line is open.
Yes, Andrew Stockton, Registrar of Voters, Preston. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Here's my question. Our polling place is a public school, which is currently closed, and I have no access to it. And it, of course, meets ADA requirements. My concern is that in order to implement a safe distancing voter traffic flow through the school area that we use as a polling place, I'm going to need to use an alternate exit. And that exit may not be in compliance with ADA. In order to implement that, I would have to purchase a portable ramp and also traffic control stanchions. My question is, are those costs for the stanchions and the portable ramp reimbursable under what has been proposed?
I think that's a great question. The first thing I would tell you to do is that the disability review and or waiver of the disability requirements for polling places was recently changed, and it now rests with your local building department. So the first thing that I would do is I would reach out to the building department to have them do an assessment to see exactly what is needed and necessary. And if you've already done that and they say that, you know, this is absolutely necessary and, you can actually justify it with regard to the COVID, then you certainly can submit it to us for reimbursement. We're going to look at each case on a case-by-case basis and see where it goes. But, yeah, I think that you certainly could submit that to us for reimbursement if it becomes necessary.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Chanel. Your line is open.
Hello, how's everyone doing? I have a couple questions. Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So I have a couple questions. One was, do you think it's a good idea if we were to send out postcards to the electors to kind of ask them, like, a polling, like, would you come to the polling, to your polling location, or would you rather vote by absentee, just to kind of give us a little more heads up on the amount of people that we could be expecting from either end?
Well, I think that you'd have to be careful on that, because remember, as the secretary just said, even though we've worked really hard on our plan, the current plan does not alter the absentee ballot requirements. And so although somebody may be legitimately sick and prevented from going to the polls, somebody that just has a preference to go to the polls, at least at this point, wouldn't simply be able to just say, yes, I want to vote by absentee ballot. So I think your polling results would be misleading to you if you were to do something like that, and also probably misleading to the public if you were to ask it that way.
Okay. And then training for our poll workers. I know that you guys want, like, three people minimum for the polls. We submitted our numbers. It's not likely for us to have three. We may have only three for the Republican side. So the training for that, how do you think we should go about that for the training?
So for the training of it, I would encourage you to have all of your poll workers take our online training. They can do that, you know, from their house, from a computer, and they'd be able to do that remotely. Then also, you certainly can set up conference calls like we've done here with your poll workers to sort of go over some other aspects of the training that you don't think are covered or you want to emphasize in the online poll worker training, and then take it from there. I think that would be perfectly acceptable to train your poll workers in preparation for August.
Okay, so for our moderators and for our assistant registrars, what if we preferred to have them still come in for face-to-face training?
Well, right. For the moderators, though, remember, the moderators are different. They have to be certified, so that's a whole different certification that needs to be done. But if you are preferring that some of your poll workers come in and have some type of face-to-face, what I would do is I would, again, work with your local Department of Public Health to see what is available and how to safely conduct those training as we get closer to August.
Okay. Thanks.
That's all. Our next question is from Carrie Latimer. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Carrie Latimer from East Hampton. Two questions. One may have been addressed, but the primary for the, you're saying three minimum workers. So you would say three for each party?
Well, it again, that depends upon the setup of your polling place and what you anticipate your turnout to be. For the presidential preference primary, many of those positions are shareable. The moderator shareable, certainly the machine tender is shareable, and depending upon, you know, what your anticipated turnout would be, I think you could probably also share the official checker. But if you don't think that that's doable, then certainly you could add one of those. But two things. One good reason that the presidential preference primary poll worker standards apply to this is because it's very wide open. It gives you a lot of latitude with your poll workers. In fact, it even says that duties that would otherwise be assigned to a poll worker who you didn't establish can be shared by other poll workers. So it's very wide in its latitude. So that's the practical good news. But the other good news is that it sets a very low standard for the number of poll workers that you have to have.
Okay.
But if you want more, you can have more. So
the second question I had was regarding the applications for the AB ballots. And you said you were going to be sending out a self-addressed stamped envelope for the return. Is that going to be mailed back to a central clearing place or to each individual town for that person?
Right. So it'll be mailed back to the town clerk in each town.
Okay. So by the person you're sending it to, you have that information. Now, we have we're moving our town hall as of the weekend. So the address would change. So who do we notify for that?
So so two things. One, update when you do move and you have a new address, update it in the centralized voter registration system because there is contact information in there and we can pick it off of there. But also when you move, just let us know and we'll update our database as well so that when we give it to the mail house, it'll be updated.
Okay, thank you.
And also if you're going to move, when did you say, in the next couple of weeks?
This weekend, yes.
Okay. Email it to me sooner rather than later so I can update the absentee ballot mailbox delivery so that they don't deliver it to the wrong place.
Okay. And this is to whom?
You can send it to me.
To Ted.
Ted. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
And folks, I think we have time for about one more person for questions. But this won't be our last conversation like this. That's for sure. So thank you.
We're talking about trying here, doing this.
And our next question is from Betsy. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. Quick question regarding the red, white, and blue mailboxes that are going to be delivered to each town, and some getting more than one. I had emailed immediately when I got notification that we already have a green box that's different from the other boxes for delivery that's strictly for town clerk and probate clerk information and mail. So I don't think that we ought to waste resources and put them where people already have mailboxes for town clerk. I don't know. I never got any feedback from that. If we're going to do it anyway, it's going to be cluttered because I have three boxes out there already. So I don't know. You know, I don't know what direction, if we have to do these red, white, and blue boxes, or if my green box for town hall is good enough. And also, I'm hoping that statute 9-463 should take precedent over silly candidates that want their names on ballots and forcing our state and other states to do expensive primary elections for candidates that certainly don't need them because they're not serious candidates. All right, that's it.
Okay, well, I mean, Betsy, we can certainly take a look at, you know, the mailbox thing. I mean, obviously, the nice thing about the mailboxes is that they're developed specifically for the ballots, and they will be labeled as such with the state seal on it and all kinds of other things that make it readily identifiable to a voter that they are, in fact, putting their absentee ballot in the proper place. But, I mean, we'll take that under advisement. We'll talk about it, you know, internally.
Okay, and the last one you didn't answer either?
Yeah, I unfortunately don't have an answer for the candidate thing for you, sorry.
Well, I just don't understand why we have specific, you know, this is a specific chapter designed strictly for presidential preference primary, so it, you know, it's designed just for that, not other things. So anyway, all right, well, thanks for everything, and we'll look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you very much, folks. This is a greatly appreciated, great conversation. We'll continue, and our office will be in touch directly with each and every one of your towns to talk about the plan, and we look forward to making this all happen. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all. We'll be talking to you very soon, I'm sure.
And this concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.
Thank you.